This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime, brought to you Wednesdays by RelicRadio.com. Our first show this week is from Richard Diamond, Private Detective. We'll hear the Hollywood story, his episode from November 16th, 1951. After that, it's Philo Vance and the Red Duck Murder, his story from May 31st, 1949.
Listen while the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Good evening. This is Bill Foreman speaking to you for the 10,000 independent druggists who have made the word Rexall part of their own store names. They've done that because they recommend and sell the 2,000 or more drug products made by the Rexall Drug Company. Rexall's brand new multivitamin product, Formula V10, is an excellent example. For Formula V10 is a really pleasant tasting, really easy to take product that helps prevent vitamin and iron deficiencies. The recommended daily dosage supplies twice the minimum requirement of vitamin B1, five times the requirement of iron, plus minimum daily requirements of A, D, and B2, plus red crystalline vitamin B12. Ask for pleasant-tasting Formula V10. That's V as in vitamin. V10 at Rexall drugstores everywhere. The stores with the orange and blue sign. Good health to all from Rexall. Now, your Rexall family druggist brings you a transcribed half hour with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Is this the Diamond Detective Agency?
What does the sign say on the door?
Diamond Detective Agency.
Now, read the second line, please.
Recommended by good housekeeping.
And the last line, please.
Homicides delivered at the rear.
That's fine. 20/20 vision. Now, if you just hop around on one foot while I classify you in 1A, I'll see that you're on the next boat to the Aleutians.
Are you Diamond?
Are you a prospective client?
Yes.
I'm Diamond. I charge $100 a day in expenses.
Do you ever leave town, Mr. Diamond?
Occasionally, but I can never get used to the tar and feathers.
I'd like you to go to California with me.
Oh. Just lonesome, or have you got a problem?
I represent a very wealthy man in Hollywood. He has a problem.
A very wealthy man, huh?
Millions.
I'd love to meet him.
I'll arrange it. When can you leave?
Well, now, that's a bit of a problem. Let's see. Close the office, do some packing, take care of a few engagements. It'll take me at least 13 minutes.
It's 4 o'clock now. We can leave LaGuardia by 5.
You have the tickets already?
No tickets are necessary, Mr. Diamond. Mr. Harvey's private plane and pilot are standing by.
The gentleman's name turned out to be Kane, Fred Kane, from Beverly Hills, California. Obviously, representing a client with more than a cozy income. Private plane, private pilot, and worth millions. How cozy can you get? I called Helen, told her I'd send her a starlit swimming pool or something, and by 5:30, I was riding with Fred Kane and Mr. Harvey's private plane, headed for sunny California.
Comfortable?
Oh, I haven't seen furnishings like this since I got lost in the men's lounge at the Waldorf.
Drink?
Later. The time has come, the walrus said.
To talk of many things.
Right.
I represent Mr. George L. Harvey.
The big motion picture producer?
Yeah. He's being blackmailed.
Well, why come all the way to New York for me? You've got some pretty good boys in California. Spade, Novak. Of course, they haven't got my blue eyes.
GL didn't want any local talent brought in on this case. You're quite well known, even in California.
Oh, well, I can understand that.
GL thought it'd be a good idea to have an outsider helping him. Someone who wouldn't be recognized.
Okay, bless old GL and all his little millions. Now, who's blackmailing him?
GL will tell you everything himself when we get to California.
Fred Kane and I played Jen for the next couple of hours, and we didn't talk any more about GL Harvey and his blackmail troubles. By 8:30, we were somewhere over Kansas, and I was getting sleepy, so I turned in. Around 6 the next morning, we landed in Burbank. I stepped out to get my first look at beautiful, wonderful, sunny California.
We'll have to run for it. GL will have a car waiting.
A car? I'm surprised at GL. I thought sure he'd meet us with his private life raft. The car was waiting all right, complete with chauffeur, footman, and dinghy. We plowed our way through 6 inches of early morning dew and headed for the Beverly Hills Hotel, where I was supposed to stay. We arrived around 7, got me settled in my room, a tiny little affair that reminded me of a well-decorated roundhouse. Then we had breakfast, and by 10 o'clock, I was standing in the offices of George L. Hyvie, Hollywood producer.
Glad you're here, Diamond. Have a seat.
Thank you. You haven't got an old ringer around you, have you?
Nasty weather, isn't it? Mm. It'll clear up. Got to. Can't stay in a cover set all week. Schedule's too tight.
Cover set?
GL shooting a new picture. If the company has some unexpected bad weather and they're shooting exteriors, they have a cover set and they can move into and shoot some interior scenes.
Oh.
You interested in motion pictures, Diamond?
Well, I see a few. Right now, I'm more interested in blackmail, Mr. Hyvie.
Yes. Well, here's the setup. Fred here introduced me to a girl about a month ago, Mary Conrad.
And now she's got you on the hook.
Very much on the hook. Pretty girl. No, more than that, beautiful. Brunette, about 5'6". Well, she's...
Beautiful.
We became very, well...
Friendly.
Yes. Mm. I'm married, Mr. Diamond. My wife doesn't know anything about this.
Unless Mary Conrad tells her.
Yes, and she's threatened to do just that.
Unless you kick through with something.
Yes.
Money?
Yes, $100,000.
Well, that's a nice round sum. Fred should be more careful about the girls he introduces you to.
I had no way of knowing, Diamond. I met the girl in Las Vegas. 2 weeks later, I met her at a party down here.
It was just as much my fault. I saw her with Fred and wanted an introduction.
And you got it. $100,000. How do you do?
Yes.
You want me to get something on her or to get the evidence back?
Well, yes.
Hmm. It's a wonder you don't get into more trouble, GL. You just don't know how to say no. It was pretty obvious that I'd have to meet the blackmailer, so a party was arranged by Fred Kane at GL's beach house, and without GL's presence, so I could get acquainted with the beautiful Mary Conrad. GL gave me a $200 retainer and blushed a little when I kissed him on both cheeks. Then Fred Kane sailed me back to the Beverly Hills, where he rented a car for me and told me how to get to the beach home. By 8 o'clock that evening, I was driving down the coast highway on the way to Malibu. I couldn't get over it. The rain had stopped. There was a big yellow moon sitting up in a cloudless sky, and a warm breeze was blowing in off the Pacific. I even put the top down.
Hello, Diamond. Come on in.
Say, what's with this weather? 1 minute it's pouring, and the next time it comes out like a travel folder.
We're just getting into the rainy season. It'll probably stay clear like this for at least a week.
Oh.
Give me your hat, and I'll take you in and introduce you to the guests.
Oh, as what? A New York gumshoe out looking for a blackmailer?
Yeah, that's right. You're an agent.
Agent? I don't know anything about agents.
You like money, don't you?
That's my name, spelled backwards.
Then you're an agent.
It was a small little party. That is, of course, if you compared it to Ebbets Field during a World Series. GL's house was in the middle of what was known as Malibu Colony. That's a bunch of houses built right out on the sand and surrounded by money. Fred took me around and introduced me as an agent from New York and an old friend. I met everything from producers, writers, and directors to several well-known motion picture stars, one of which had her French poodle with her.
And this is Michelle, Mr. Diamond. Say hello to Mr. Diamond, Michelle.
Oh, oh! Oops, sorry. Great Dane. And on until finally we got around to my objective for the evening. And believe me, I'd enlist 3 times a week just to go after that kind of an objective. Brunette, about 5'6". When she looked up at me, I felt as nervous as a cat in a ukulele factory.
This is Mary Conrad, Mr. Diamond, Mary.
Hello.
Nice to him. He's a big New York agent. I see some other guests now. Take care of them, Mary.
Looks like Fred has paired us off.
Well, he knows a good combination when he sees it. 2 best-looking people at the party. Of course, I'm prettier than you are.
How long have you known Fred?
Fred? Oh, years and years. We used to play stickball together over in Canarsie.
I thought Fred was a native Californian.
Hmm. Well, oh, yes. Well, he is. He used to come all the way to New York just for the stickball. We had quite a team.
I'll bet you did. What position did you play?
I played left gutter. That's the dirty side of the street.
Oh.
How about a drink, huh? She showed me where the bar was, and we sat down and got acquainted. Then she showed me where the ocean was, and we took off our shoes and walked out on the sand. Then we sat down and really got acquainted.
It's nicer out here. I don't like parties much.
Well, I like this one.
Compliment?
Naturally.
Oh, thank you. How long are you going to be in California?
Oh, I don't know. It depends.
Business?
Yeah.
You're not having much fun, are you?
Oh, sure. I'm having a ball.
You're lonesome, aren't you?
Like 50 miles of dirt road.
Let's leave the party.
All right. Where to?
Well, my car's here, and it wouldn't be good to be seen leaving together. I'll go first, and you follow in about 5 minutes. You can pick me up at my house.
Score for Diamond. She gave me her address and told me how to get there. Then we walked back to the party, and she left. I gave the high sign to Kane, and in 5 minutes, I followed. Mary Conrad's house was on the outskirts of Beverly Hills, south of Pico. There was a long, low, black sedan, the type a chauffeur usually drives, parked in front of the house. The same car that had picked me up at the airport that morning. And it belonged to G.L. Harvey. Before I could get parked, the door to the little house flew open, and old G.L. himself came barreling out like a squirrel with his tail on fire. G.L.! Mr. Harvey! Hey! Mr. Harvey!
Here's a question for all overweight women. Would you like to know how to reduce without starving, without counting calories, without back-breaking exercise?
Would I? But it isn't possible, is it?
It certainly is. With a new Ann Delafield reducing plan, you lose up to 5 pounds a week and gain new pep and energy besides. Best of all, you have none of the hunger pangs and bother that most people dread about reducing. The Ann Delafield reducing plan shows you how to lose weight naturally.
Sounds wonderful. What does the plan include?
Everything you need to slim you down and keep you slim. Vitamins to bolster your diet. Ann Delafield appetite-reducing wafers to curb that unruly appetite. And an important complete beauty book. And here's a tip for all overweight men. Rexall is proud to announce their new Delafield-reducing plan for men. It's sound, scientific, and easy. So look young, feel young, stay young for your age. Ask for the Delafield-reducing plan for men. Available only at Rexall drugstores. And now back to tonight's adventure with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Say, what the devil?
Hello there, Mr. Harvey.
Diamond, how did you get into the studio?
I went to your home first.
My home? You didn't talk to anyone?
Your car wasn't around, so I tried the studio. The cop at the gate wouldn't let me in, so I climbed a fence.
Climbed a fence?
It was better than having him call you. You might have wanted to see me.
I'd wanted to see you. Don't be foolish. Why not see you?
You often come to your offices late at night.
Look, Diamond, I saw you when you yelled at me in front of Mary Conrad's house.
Why didn't you stop?
I was too frightened. I was scared stiff. I suppose you found her.
Yeah.
Oh, it was terrible. Awful. Just awful.
I'll bet it was.
I thought about going home. I thought about a lot of places. I ended up here.
Did you kill her?
No. Of course I didn't kill her. She called me from Malibu, told me to meet her at her house. I got there before she did. She drove up and we went in. It was just awful.
You went in, then what?
She turned the living room light on and there was a shot. She looked kind of surprised and I was too stunned for a minute to really know what had happened. Then she just kind of looked at me like she wanted me to help. It was then I really got it. I knew she'd been shot. She fell, and I rushed over to her. She died right there, lying on the floor, looking up at me like I don't know.
There was a gun beside her.
Was there? I didn't see it.
Well, here it is. Take a look at it. 45, one shot fired. Ever seen it before?
No.
You know, I could get in a lot of trouble taking this gun from the scene of murder. But I had a hunch it was worth it. I thought maybe it might be your gun. If it isn't, I'll get it back to the cops and take my chances.
I don't know whether it is or not.
Well, do you own a 45?
Yes, I keep it at the beach house. But even if that turns out to be my gun, Mr. Diamond, I didn't kill Mary Conrad.
Oh, I don't think you did either. You might have wanted to kill her because of the blackmail, but that would be premeditated. You'd plan it, and a man who commits a planned killing doesn't leave the murder weapon around, especially if it happens to belong to him. But if you were in love with her...
I wasn't.
Well, I'm taking that chance. A jealous lover might do a lot of silly things.
I have a wife and family.
I thought about that, too. But I'm not sure the police would pay much attention. If the blackmail got out, you'd have a motive. If this gun turns out to be yours, has your fingerprints on it, that would cinch it.
What about the police?
I called them and got out. You know where the shot came from?
I didn't even take time to think about it. I just ran.
There was a heavy smell of cordite on the other side of the room near the bedroom. Bedroom door was ajar. Bedroom window was open. Killer probably shot her from the bedroom. You ran. He threw the gun in beside the body.
What are we going to do?
Well, there's one thing that makes me wonder a little. Mary Conrad asked me to come over to her house, too. What do you suppose she wanted with both of us there?
I can't imagine.
Well, neither can I. It's certainly worth looking into.
Thanks, Diamond.
You know, I've had some pretty fair experiences with murder, G.L., but like everybody else, I make mistakes. I hope this is not going to be one of them. I gave G.L. Harvey two instructions. First, find out if he was missing a 45 automatic. Second, go on about his business like nothing had happened. And forget that he'd known Mary Conrad other than casually. I knew I was taking a big chance. Being an accessory after the fact could land me in a lot of hot water. But G.L. just didn't figure as the killer. And if I was right, someone was trying to fit him for a king-size frame. Why? Who? What was the motive? Those were things I was going to have to find out and find them out in a hurry. So while the police were undoubtedly still busy with an identification on Mary Conrad, I got back in my rented car and took off for Malibu.
Back so soon?
No laughs.
You find out anything?
Where can we talk?
You look like something's wrong.
You should see how Mary Conrad looks. Fred Kane took me in the den and we locked out the rest of the party. I told him just what had happened. And he poured himself a long drink.
Yeah. You think G.L. really did it?
I want to do some checking on Mary Conrad before I start making any guesses. Now, you said you met her in Las Vegas, didn't you?
That's right.
And then tell me everything you know about her. And he didn't know much. He'd met Mary at the Serena Hotel, just ran into her at a party. He had seen her several times in the following few days, and she had mentioned she was coming down to L.A., so he'd ask her to look him up. She had, and that was the extent of it.
What do I tell the police? They'll certainly find out who she's been seeing.
It'll take them a while to check. Did she have any other friends?
She never mentioned any.
You met her at the Serena. Was she with anyone?
I don't remember his name.
You remember the date?
It was about a month ago, the last few days I was there.
Well, okay. I'm going to take a trip to Vegas and see if I can find out anything more.
You must really think G.L.'s innocent.
Don't you?
Well, yes. But he certainly had a motive.
Oh, I don't think G.L. would kill anyone for $100,000. The thing I can't figure is why anyone would want to frame him. What could they gain by it? I drove back to Burbank, grabbed the late plane for Las Vegas, and about an hour and a half later, I was checking with the desk clerk at the Serena. We went through the lists of guests during the time Fred Kane's last visit. Kane had checked out on the 8th of October. He said he'd met Mary Conrad several days before. I gave the desk clerk her description, but he didn't remember. And she hadn't been registered at the Serena. So I started checking every hotel and motor court in Vegas.
Mary Conrad, huh?
Yeah, about 5'6". Brunette, blue eyes.
Mary Conrad. Oh, she didn't register here. Here, take a look for yourself.
I kept going, one hotel after another. No Mary Conrad registered at any of them. But she had to live someplace if she stayed in Las Vegas. Bartender, give me a scotch and water.
Sure thing. Gotta roll.
Hey, you look a little beat, friend. Can I buy you a drink?
I just bought one.
Hey, I understand you're trying to find Mary Conrad.
You know her?
Yeah.
Well, friend, I'd like to ask you some questions.
What's it worth?
Depends on how much you know.
I know plenty.
I will see. What's your name?
Not here. You can get a car outside. We'll take a ride.
Okay. Information, please, slid off the stool and led the way out of the hotel and out across the parking lot. This guy knew I was looking for Mary Conrad. How? Had to be tipped off or he'd been tailing me. When he walked in front of me, the little old gun in his hip pocket showed up like a bathing beauty on a gorilla farm. Hey, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Where's the car?
Huh? Oh, right over there.
Mm-hmm. The one with the fat guy behind the wheel?
Just a friend.
Oh, sure, sure. I think we talk right here. He thought about it for a second, glanced over at his fat friend sitting in the car, then back at me.
Here?
Right here.
Okay.
He made up his mind, all right. He grabbed for his right hip pocket and that big gun, but that was as far as he got because I second-guessed him. His friend took off, staying behind a line of parked cars until he was clear of the parking lot and far enough away so I couldn't get in a good shot. I leaned down over the man who had wanted to kill me. He was very dead. Well, I'd held out police evidence in Los Angeles and killed a man in Las Vegas. I was on the spot, and only one lead left. The big fat driver who'd taken off in the car. I went through the dead man's pocket and came up with one thing. $100 gambling chip from the Ace of Clubs casino. Oh, how about using that car of yours?
Huh?
Don't turn around, or you'll get mixed up with a lot of bullets.
What do you want?
A talk. Keep looking straight ahead like nothing was happening. I'll kill you if you try anything, I promise you that.
What is this? Who are you?
I just shot a friend of yours in the Serena parking lot.
I've been in my office all night.
Oh, sure. Start walking for the door.
You'll never get away with this, Diamond.
I thought you didn't know me. Start walking.
I own this place, Diamond. My boys are all over the joint.
Well, yell for them once and you have a dirty old hole in your pretty coat.
Look, you and me can discuss this without getting rough.
Out the door and smile. Now, where's the car?
Across the street.
Now, wait a minute. A couple of your boys are following us. They look a little worried about me. Tell them how happy you are. Go on.
Okay. Relax, boys. It's okay. Me and my friend are just talking some business.
All right. Across the street. We're going to take a little drive outside of town where we can have some peace and quiet. Just you and me in the desert. That's good enough. Pull off the road.
Look, Diamond.
Pull off the road.
You know, the cops are going to be out looking for you.
That's why I need some answers in a hurry. Why did your boy try to kill me tonight?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Get out of the car.
Now, look, I swear...
Get out!
What's this going to prove, Diamond?
You're going to start walking straight out into that desert. At the end of 100 paces, if you haven't told me what I want to know, you're going to get it. Right in your big, ugly face.
You'll never get away with it.
Walk. Now, that's the trouble with you big, tough guys. Get a fellow in a spot, and you never figure he might just be desperate enough to shoot his way out of it. Why did your boy try to knock me off tonight?
I've got a lot of dough, Diamond. I can get you out of the state and make you rich. I'll swear you killed my boy in self-defense.
How well do you know Mary Conrad?
Well, never heard of her.
I've held out police evidence in California, and I've shot a man in Nevada. I'm in a tough spot. I'll just about do anything.
You kill me and you'll never find out anything.
I'll keep looking. Who else is mixed up in this? How do you know who I was?
I found out.
Well, you're nearly there.
You're bluffing.
You got 15 paces to go.
You'll never get out of town. You kill me and every cop in the state will be after you.
You're a big man, huh?
I swing a lot of weight.
Well, I don't like your kind of big men. Stop here. How about it? Gonna tell me how you're mixed up in this?
Now, wait a minute. This is getting ridiculous.
It's a matter of opinion. You gonna tell me?
Wait. You must be nuts. Supposing I did know something. I tell you, you tell the cops. Maybe I knocked off somebody. I get the gas chamber.
Then it shouldn't make any difference to you. This would be a lot quicker.
What do you want to know?
Who's Mary Conrad?
My girl. Her real name's Mary Langley.
Who killed her?
Fred Kane, the guy who works for Jill Harvey.
Why?
Kane owed me a lot of dough. Couldn't pay it. Jill Harvey was to go to the gas chamber for killing someone. Kane had become head of the Harvey Productions.
Why wouldn't Harvey's wife take over?
She'd own it, but Jill's will states that Kane would run it.
How do you fit?
Kane promised me a 50-50 split if I'd lay off about the debt. I talked Mary into it, and Kane introduced her to Harvey. The old boy went for a hook, line, and sinker. Then she started blackmailing him.
So you'd have a motive for murder?
Yeah.
She never figured she was going to get killed.
No, she just thought we were going to milk the old boy for the $100,000 and pull out.
How did I fit in?
Harvey's idea. When Kane told me about it, I figured it wouldn't be bad. You could catch Harvey after the murder.
Well, why did you make a date with me and then call Harvey?
Well, we told her to. Told her you were a private eye working for Harvey's wife. We said that you could be bought and it would be a good idea to catch her with Harvey.
So you waited in the bedroom until G.L. came in and you shot her, threw the gun in beside her.
Hey, wait a minute. I didn't shoot her. Kane shot her.
Oh, Kane took G.L.'s gun from the Malibu house?
That's right.
Oh, you lame brain. I left Kane at the Malibu house when I went to see Mary. He was there when I got back. Witnesses will swear he was around the whole time. You killed the girl and hopped a plane back here for Vegas.
No, I didn't kill her.
Go over by that rock.
Take it easy, Diamond.
Go on.
Okay, I shot her. I hid in the bedroom and shot her. But you won't be around to talk about it.
Come on, get up. Oh, for Pete's sake, now I have to carry him back to the car.
Here at last is a mouthwash that cleans as it sweetens as it deodorizes. It's new triple-acting Rexall mouthwash with chlorophyll. And it's more effective because it combines nature's own breath freshener, chlorophyll, with a foaming action that floats away retained food particles. What's more, a special surface-active ingredient gives Rexall mouthwash with chlorophyll a wider coverage, a deeper penetration. The result? A clean, fresh mouth. A clean, fresh breath for hours. So fresh up with a cooling, minty-flavored mouthwash that cleans as it sweetens, as it deodorizes. Rexall mouthwash with chlorophyll at Rexall drugstores everywhere. Good health to all from Rexall. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, stars Dick Powell in the title role and was written by Blake Edwards with music composed and conducted by Frank Worth. Dick Powell directed the RKO production Split Second, which is now in release. And his latest film appearance was in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer award-winning The Bad and the Beautiful. Featured in tonight's cast were Junius Matthews, Raymond Burr, Gene Bates, Virginia Gregg, and Wilms Herbert. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. This is Bill Foreman inviting you to be with us next Sunday at this time when Rexall Drug Products again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Men, cut your shaving time in half. Use Stag Brushless Shave Cream, the brushless cream that stays moist longer. No fuss, no rub-in. Just smooth it on for quicker, closer, face-happier shaves every time. Ask for Stag Brushless Shave Cream. Jumbo tube, only 50 cents. At Rexall drugstores everywhere.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Stop twirling that keychain. You're making me nervous.
Easy, Joe. You're blowing your top, kid.
Don't call me kid. Now, look, Eddie, I'm trying to be calm. Trying to be calm ain't easy with a guy like you. Now, tell me what happened and tell me fast.
Solid. Nothing to get excited about, kid.
Don't call me kid. Now, look, I'm your boss, Joe D'Angelo. You call me Mr. D'Angelo or Joe. But you don't call me kid. You get that?
Okay, kid.
What?
You want a report? Here it is. I passed two of the $100 bills you're making in competition with the government. No trouble. You like that?
Two of them, huh? That is good. Where?
One of them I got rid of down at the restaurant on Green Street. No trouble.
Uh-huh.
The other I got rid of at the haberdashery. Guy looks the bill over good, and he gives me the change as nice as you please. We're in business, Joe.
You bet your life we are. Only this local stuff is small time, see? Tell you what I want to do now, Eddie.
Yeah?
I want you to make contacts in different cities. Sell them the counterfeit bills I make. Can you do it?
Natch. Push over. What do you want for them?
25%. I want 25 bucks of good dough for every $100 phony. Can you get it?
I'm gonna get more than that, kid. I'm getting 30 bucks instead of 25.
Okay, I could use the other five.
Yeah, maybe you can, kid. The other five goes to me. That's my commission.
Don't start anything, Eddie. Remember now, you just work for me. You do like I tell you.
Yeah, who takes the risks of passing a queer? You? No, me. And I've got what I can for you here. Don't you forget, the FBI would like to know what you're doing. Now that that's settled, I think...
Wait a minute. Georgie, come in here.
Hey, what is this?
You'll find out. Come in, Georgie.
Really, Mr. D'Angelo, I wish you wouldn't scream my name. It's disturbing. Well, what is it you want?
Georgie, Eddie here is getting ambitious.
Might have expected something like that from him. Look at what he's wearing. The suit coat is 3 inches too long. That keychain is in horrible taste. And the color of that suit, midnight blue.
Hey, what is this, a lesson in what I should wear? What do you want with Georgie, Joe?
You'll find out. Georgie, you're a good boy. So I'm going to let you have some fun. Right now.
Hey, let go of my arm. Joe. Hey, Mr. D'Angelo,
go, will you? Georgie, I can't hold this character all day.
Joe, let me go, will you?
Is that it?
Of course I have. Right here.
Joe, let me go.
I'm ready to use it.
Joe, no!
It's done, Mr. D'Angelo. You won't have any trouble at all from him from now on. Oh, dear.
What's the matter, Georgie?
Oh, nothing. It's all right. I thought for a moment I'd gotten a bit of lint from his shirt... on my suit.
But Mr. Markham, my boy is gone. And he was a good boy, Mr. Markham.
I'm sure he was, Mrs. Macon, but there isn't anything I can do.
Oh, you can't.
I'm district attorney. You want the police department, Bureau of Missing Persons.
No, no.
I'll get them on the phone for you.
No. It is not them I want. You and your friend, Philo Vance, I hear about
Mrs.
you.
Mrs. Macon,
I read about the two of you, and now my Eddie is missing. You can find him, Mr. Markham. He's a good boy.
Well, if it'll help you any to tell me about him, Mrs. Macon, go right ahead. I'll turn the information over to the proper authorities.
Mr. Markham, last night, Eddie, he does not come home. Always he comes home. Every night. Last night, he does not come home. 3 weeks ago, he quit his job. It's a good job, Mr. Markham. He was a shipping clerk.
Go ahead, Mrs. Macon.
After he leave that job, he have more money than when he work. I said to him, Eddie, I said, where you get this money? But they won't tell me. And now he's gone. Something has happened to him, Mr. Markham. You have got to find out what it is. You and Mr. Vance.
I hardly think this is a matter for Vance, Mrs. Macon, but I can promise you this. I have a description of your son.
Yes.
And the photograph you brought me.
Yes.
I'll do what I can to find him. You can depend on that. I'll do what I can.
Again, you're filing your nails, always filing your nails. Put that file away, Georgie.
Certainly, Mr. D'Angelo. You sound upset. There's something wrong.
That kid. That Eddie Macon we knocked off.
Mm-hmm. We don't need him, I assure you. I'm quite capable of passing all the counterfeit bills you make and of making connections to have them passed in other cities. So why worry about him?
Oh, yeah? Suppose they find his body. Suppose they trace it back to us. Then what?
My dear Mr. DeAngelo, don't be ridiculous. First of all, they'll never find his body. It's down at the bottom of the lake, very carefully weighed with a very heavy stone. Second of all, even if they did find it, there is nothing that will lead the police to us. Absolutely nothing. What are you going to do now?
Gonna go to work on this press. Might as well get some of those bills moving, in case we have to blow town in a hurry.
Ridiculous. We'll be here as long as we'd like. See you later.
Where are you going?
Out of here. I simply won't be able to stand the sound of that printing machine.
Beautiful drive, Vance.
Thank you, Markham. Beautiful drive, beautiful day for golf. What more could a man want?
What's wrong with a beautiful dame? That wouldn't hurt me.
A caddy has something there, Vance.
Yes, he has. But a beautiful girl might lead to trouble. And this is no day for trouble.
I'll go down to your ball, Mr. Vance. I'll be there by the time Mr. Markham shoots.
I hope I hit one long enough so that I have to really walk for it. I need the exercise. Well, here goes.
Well, not bad, my friend. It's right up there with mine. Come on, let's go.
Right. Oh, by the way, Vance, there was a woman in my office to see me this morning.
Uh-oh.
Quite an old woman. Her son had disappeared. From what I gathered, he was a good boy who met a wrong crowd. She was terribly worried.
That's one of the things you can always depend upon a mother to do. Worry. Did you turn it over to the Missing Persons Bureau?
Yes, but they haven't uncovered anything. Oh, well, I don't imagine we should concern ourselves with it. After all, it is a beautiful day. I wonder where my shot landed.
Our caddy is standing down the fairway a bit. One of us is there, no doubt. Probably both of us. Both shots were headed in the same direction.
We'll see. Oh, by the way, Vance, this is a course you've never played before. There's a stream running through the fairway about 300 yards from the tee. That should be about 100 yards from where our shot landed.
Water hazard in the middle of the course, eh? Definitely unfair.
Natural hazard, I believe. But a good brassy shot will carry it over onto the green. Well, here we are.
And both together, as I imagined. Boy, brassy, please.
Yes, sir, here you are.
Thank you.
There's water about 100 yards down, sir.
So Mr. Markham was telling me.
Water comes from Lake Ralph. We go ice skating there in the wintertime. Boy, fun.
So I'd imagine. Swimming in summer, skating in winter.
Oh, not much swimming, Mr. Vance. Couple of boats and ducks in the lake all the time. Funniest ducks you ever saw.
What's funny about them?
Well, this morning I seen them on my way here. They got red feet.
Red feet, eh?
Yeah.
That is strange. Well, here goes a try with this brassy. Hope I get enough carry with it.
I'm betting on you.
Well, thanks for your confidence. There it goes.
A beauty, Vance. Now, if I can only duplicate that shot.
If I were you, I would, Markham. Principally because this is the last hole we'll have time to play.
Nonsense. We're playing all day.
I don't think you'll want to play after what I have to tell you.
Oh, what is it, Vance?
You see, in the event that the missing Eddie Macon was stabbed, I think I know where his body is.
Well, Vance, the police diver found Eddie Macon's body at the bottom of Lake Ralph, and it'll be brought to the surface any minute now. But how did you know it would be there?
The clue of the red ducks, Markham. Remember what the caddy told us? The only thing that would account for red feet on ducks would be blood in the water. And blood in the water could come from a body if it had been stabbed.
Wait a minute, Vance, please. If there were blood on the water, it would have been noticed, wouldn't it?
Certainly. But the blood became dissipated in and by the water, Markham. Only before it had, the ducks swam over the spot where the body was located, got blood on their feet, and then went on land.
I'm enjoying this, Vance. You're even able to trace the movements of ducks. What a man.
Well, it's reasonably simple. On land, the water from the ducks' feet would dry, but the blood would cake and be retained in the webbing.
I suppose that's right. In fact, I know it's right now. Oh, we've got men going all through those bushes on shore here looking for some tie-up with the crime.
I hope they find something. Merely getting the body will tell us nothing, I'm afraid. I'm going to enjoy working on this case even more than I usually enjoy working on a murder case.
Why? Because the killer spoiled our golf game?
Yes, that and the fact that we're not going to have very much to work with, if anything.
You're a strange man, Vance. The tougher the problem, the greater pleasure for you. Most of the time, it's the other way. Well, that's Sergeant Heath's voice. Over here, Heath.
From the tone of the sergeant's voice, I'd say he'd found something.
I certainly hope so.
Hi, Mr. Markham. Well, hello, Vance. You're here on this case, too, huh?
That's right.
It's because of Vance that we're here on this case, Heath. What's up?
Well, one of my men was beating around the bushes, came up with this glove. It's all bloodstained, but All identification's been removed.
Let me see that, will you, Heath?
Sure, here you are.
Thank you.
Hey, what are you turning it inside out for? I told you all the marks have been removed.
Yes, you did.
Oh, even the button's been yanked off. Guess it had the name of the maker on it.
Well, that's true, of course, but this glove is very informative just the same.
What do you mean, Vance?
Well, for one thing, it hasn't lain in the bushes very long, which means it probably was thrown away by the murderer of Eddie Macon, who's only been missing 24 hours.
Well, so what? What good is that if we can't tell anything about the murderer?
We can tell a lot about him from this glove, Heath.
Huh?
If I were you, I'd send out an alarm for a tall, thin man, about 6'2", immaculate in dress, left-handed, carries a walking stick, and, yes, he's blonde.
Huh?
Vance, how in the world do you know that?
Let's get in your car and drive over to see Eddie Macon's mother, Markham. I'll tell you all about it on the way.
Well, I'm waiting, Vance.
Sorry, Markham, I was just thinking of something, but it doesn't matter now. What you want to know is how I got the picture of our murder suspect just from looking at a blood-stained glove.
That's right.
Well, it's reasonably simple. The glove was a large size, leading me to assume that the murderer was a tall man. However, the fingers on the glove were very narrow, hence the killer was thin.
But the way he dressed and the fact that he was left-handed and carried a stick.
Most men who carry a stick are meticulous in dress, Markham. And the glove was a little worn between the index finger and the inside of the thumb. Only a stick would cause a worn spot such as I noticed in that particular place.
Well, granting all that, what about the fact that he was left-handed, that he was blonde, that he was well-dressed?
Left-handed? Well, the glove we found was a left glove, and apparently he carried his stick in his left hand. Blonde? I saw a very small blonde hair on the inside of the glove. The police laboratory would have detected that, I'm sure.
And what about the business of his being well-dressed?
There were traces of liquid nail polish on the tip of the inside of the fingers, Markham. Apparently, after his most recent manicure, he was in a hurry and didn't give the polish a chance to dry. That's all there is to it. That and the fact that most men who carry a stick are well-dressed.
It certainly sounds simple the way you say it. And it's just as well that the explanation's over, because here's Mrs. Macon's house.
She knows about her son.
Yes, Heath telephoned her. I imagine she's all broken up. She was almost hysterical when she came into my office to report him missing.
Well, we'll soon find out. Coming, Markham.
Of course. What do you expect to find here, Vance?
If we're lucky, Mrs. Macon will be able to tell us which of her son's friends answers the description I feel fits the murderer.
That'll certainly simplify this case.
Yes, it will. And it's one reason that I don't believe we'll find anything. The bell, Markham.
Right. There's one thing I hate. It's dealing with hysterical women, Vance.
We may have a surprise in store for us there, too, Markham.
Yes. Oh, it is Mr. Markham.
Yes, hello, Mrs. Macon. This is Philo Vance. You remember you asked me to get him to help find your son.
Yes, and you would not do it.
It wouldn't have done any good, Mrs. Macon. Your son was already dead when you came to see Mr. Markham.
Perhaps. What is it you want?
We have a description of a man we believe might be your son's murderer. We'd like to know if you knew such a man.
What does he look like?
He's tall, blonde, dresses very well, carries a walking stick, quite thin.
I don't know anybody like that. And neither did my son.
You can't help us?
You could not help me. I cannot help you. Good day, gentlemen.
This is District Attorney Markham. The Red Duck murder case began with the finding of the body of Eddie Macon, who had been stabbed. From a glove discovered near the scene of the crime, Philo Vance has constructed a detailed picture of the killer. So far, we have been unable to find a man answering the description. At this time, he might be almost anywhere. In a taxi, in a park, in a shop.
Come, my man. Please, just wrap it up and give it to me, and I'll take it with me. I have my car outside.
Just one moment, sir, please, if you don't mind.
One moment? What for? I'm in a hurry.
Yes, but you've given me a $100 bill. I'll have to get the change from the back of the shop. I won't be but a moment, sir.
Very well, but hurry. I don't have all day. Fine thing. Shopkeeper who can't keep change for $100 in his register.
Headquarters.
Hello, this is Bailey at Bailey's Men's Shop on Main Street. A man is in the shop, tall, blonde, and he's carrying a stick. He just gave me a $100 bill. It's one of those counterfeits we were told to watch out for.
Good. Stall him there a few minutes. We'll be right over.
Right.
Sorry to have kept you waiting, sir. But I'll have your change in just a moment.
Very cute, weren't you? But you don't trap me. I'm getting out of here.
What? Hey, you, stop! Stop! Excuse me, please.
Well, not
pardon
you.
Me, please. Stop him, somebody! Somebody stop that man on the roaster there! Hey, you! You in the car, stop! Okay.
Get off, you fool, get off.
Oh, no, my friend, I'm hanging under this door.
I warn you to get off. This gun will change your mind. Oh! Get off or I'll slam it down on your other hand. There.
Oh!
Now, off! Oh.
Markham speaking.
This is Vance, Markham.
Vance, I've been calling you all over town. We're hot on the trail of the blonde killer. He's tied up with a counterfeit ring. Did you know that?
No. Tell me about it.
He tried to pass a counterfeit bill, and the shopkeeper almost grabbed him. He answers your description perfectly, by the way.
Good.
Well, it isn't so very good. We still don't know where to locate him.
Well, that's why I called you. I can tell you where he lives.
What?
Sergeant Heath and I made a very thorough canvas of custom tailors, better-type haberdashers, and barber shops, and finally found our blonde friend's manicurist. I asked Heath to let me take it from there.
Well, that's fine with me, but do we grab our blonde counterfeiter now?
No, Markham. We're not ready for that yet. You meet me at the address I'll give you in a moment, and we'll make plans to break up the whole counterfeit ring. We'll break that up and get our murderer at the same time.
Please, Mr. D'Angelo, please turn off that printing press.
Take it easy, Georgie. You file your nails, it gets on my nerves. My press gets on yours. Same difference.
Please turn it off, won't you?
Okay, okay. Only every time it makes a noise, we make another load of dough, Georgie. Don't forget that.
I know. And money is terribly important. It buys clothes, handmade shirts, this Hamburg hat. Yes, I must have money, Joe.
You're going to roll in it in another week, Georgie.
I know, Mr. D'Angelo. You and I are very clever, aren't we?
We're the best, Georgie. The best. I make them, you pass them. When there's trouble, we handle it.
You should have seen the face of the fellow I pushed off my car.
Any chance of his tracing the car, Georgie?
None at all. I had a rag over the license plates. Horribly dirty rag.
Did an awful clean job for us. Don't forget that.
No, that's true. Mr. D'Angelo, nobody is any closer to us than they were before we killed Eddie Macon. We're completely in the clear. And we'll stay that way until we leave town. Right?
Right. One more week and we'll have enough counterfeit money made to start our own treasury department. Then, a month to drop it off in different cities. And then you know where I'm going, Georgie?
No. Where?
I'm gonna spend the rest of my life on Easy Street.
Any answer yet, Markham?
No, Vance. I'm still holding the phone, and the operator's still checking for the address.
Quite a nice apartment the blonde killer has, isn't it? Excellent taste.
I'm still not quite sure how you found it, Vance.
Well, Markham, his type of man had to have his nails done very often, usually by the same manicurist. Sergeant Heath and I found a manicurist at one of the better hotels who had a customer answering our description. She once had to go to his apartment to do his nails and remembered the address. It was as simple as that.
That's everything is simple once you set to work on it. Oh. I sure wish this operator would answer.
I wish our blonde friend had been here when we broke into his apartment. All we found was that telephone number on his pad.
What happens after the operator gives us the name and address belonging to that number?
It all depends on who the number belongs to. If we think
I'm sorry to keep you waiting, sir.
Oh, wait a minute, Nancy. It's all right, miss. I'm still here.
The number is listed under the name of Joseph D'Angelo, printer, at 484 Jean Street.
D'Angelo, printer. Thank you very much. Vance,
I heard. Well, it's all starting to tie up now, Markham. You get Heath and a squad of men. I'm going to 484 Jean Street.
Mr. D'Angelo!
Huh? What's the matter, Georgie? What's going on?
We've got to get out of here.
Wait till I turn off this machine.
What is this?
I just called the shop where I have my nails done. I have to make an appointment.
Yeah, never mind all that. What happened?
The girl told me a man was asking questions about me. Said he was a friend of mine. She told him where I lived and... Joe, I have this phone number written on a pad.
Oh, you jerk. Well, come on. Let's break all this stuff and throw it in the melting pot.
Yes.
Anybody comes here 2 minutes from now won't find a thing.
All that lovely money, too.
Every hunk of paper in a joint. Now, come on, hurry.
Right.
Guy who asked those questions might be here any minute now.
Yes.
Take the lid off that stove down there.
All right. This money lying around isn't dry yet. I'll get ink all over my hands.
So what? Take off your coat. We've got work to do.
I'll get ink on this beautiful shirt. I just had it made.
Take that coat off and step on it. Now, here. Dump these bills into the fire.
All right.
I'm going to take the press apart and melt down those plates.
Oh, my beautiful shirt. It'll be ruined. I'll get the money out of the way.
One more trip would I make it. I'll bang this press into so many pieces, nobody will know what it was.
Couldn't we save the plates? Those beautifully engraved plates on the table.
They go next. Right into the fire, pretty boy. How you doing?
I've destroyed all the money.
Good. Ah, I got to go to work on these.
I wouldn't work on anything if I were you.
Georgie, this must be the guy who asked questions. The knife, Georgie, the knife. Only how'd he get in?
The door was open and I walked in.
The knife, Georgie, use the knife.
The knife, Mr.
Oh,
D'Angelo.
No, you don't get him, Georgie. I'll hold his arm.
No, you don't either. Oh. I'm trying to do that more often.
You'll never do anything again, ever. This knife
Drop
will...
it. Drop that
no,
knife.
My arm.
Drop it. Let go.
I'll drop it. But I'll get out of here. You'll never catch me.
Never saw a man so wrong in my life. Friend's out cold, and I'm holding you here until the police come.
Stop it! Stop it and let me alone!
You stay right here against this table.
No.
Oh, no, you don't!
No!
Don't try to get away. Got a gun, eh?
Stop it! You're breaking my back!
Yes.
Breaking my back!
You're breaking
tell you.
My heart! I'll...
Oh, thank you, Mr. D'Angelo. He didn't hit you as hard as you thought.
I got a tough chin. Now, listen, Georgie. That guy I just slugged's Philo Vance. That means the cops will be here soon. Now, come on, help me break up this engraving plate on the table, and when the cops get here, nobody will know what we've been up to. There won't be a trace of anything.
But what about Vance?
He's yours. Yours and your knives.
Good. In that case, let's hurry and break up these plates.
I can take care of this alone. You go on over and lock the outside door so we don't have no more company.
Sure, I'll do that, Mr. D'Angelo. All locked, Mr. D'Angelo. What do we do now?
Just about taking care of these plates. That does it. Now we get to work on Vance.
Open up in there. Open up.
Cops.
They're breaking in the door, Mr. D'Angelo. What should we do?
Get out of here. The back way and fast.
Come no, not yet. I've got to take care of Mr. Vance. I've got to be...
Why? Oh. Come on, men. All right. Oh. Both of you. Hold it right where you are.
Take your hands
you
off me.
You'll have to take care of Mr. Vance. We could have been out of
men,
here.
Sergeant, all right. They're both yours. All right, Mr. Markham. Hey, look at Vance on the floor.
Vance, are you all right?
Okay,
Vance.
Come on, you're going with us.
What for? What do you got on us? We saw this guy break in and we slugged him. We thought he was a stick-up guy.
Mr. Markham?
Don't try anything funny, D'Angelo. We know you've been counterfeiting and we can prove it.
Yeah, how? See any phony dough around? Any plates?
Markham, Mr. D'Angelo is right.
Vance, can you get up all right?
I'll be all right in a minute. What I was saying is that Mr. D'Angelo is right. There's practically no evidence of counterfeiting in this place now.
Hey, say, what did I tell you?
Yes. Do you see what Mr. D'Angelo told you?
I said there was practically no evidence. Turn around, my blonde friend. Turn around and show the district attorney indisputable evidence that not only was there counterfeiting going on here, but that you and Mr. D'Angelo were doing it. Not much to discuss in this case, is there, Markham?
Just one thing, Vance. Our blonde friend George in the back of his shirt.
Oh, that. Well, I suspected that D'Angelo and George would break up their plates if they succeeded in overpowering me. So, before they did, I forced George in his clean white shirt up against the engraving plate. So, when he turned around, you saw several counterfeit impressions of $100 bills on it.
Yes, we did. And I don't mind telling you we needed that evidence to make sure that that was the end of the two counterfeiters.
George confessed rather easily, I understand.
Yes, yes, his type always does, Vance. He admitted he killed Eddie Macon.
Well, then, that little device of mine not only meant the end of the two counterfeiters, but also the end of the Red Duck murder case.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Richard Diamond, Philo Vance, past episodes of Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there. Our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your support makes all of this possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.